Welcome to Prog Rock Digital. Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Prog Rock Digital. This is episode 3 of season 2. Thank you very much for downloading and streaming. Don't forget to visit progrockdigital.com. Now, today's episode is a package of conversations that were had back in 2020. I spoke with Joey Vera, Mark Zonder, Nick Van Dyke, Mick Box from the band Uriah Heep. I also spoke with Gary Werkamp and my very good friend, Ioannis. Now, just to give you some context on the episode, I have condensed our conversations down to a approximately 20-minute episode. Think of this as a retrospective look at 2020. I'm looking forward to 21. We've already had Nick DiVigilio and George Coleus on this year. With our next episode, I will chat again with my good friend Ioannis. We're going to cover off on the A Pleasant Shade of Grey album, or if you like, Absog, by the band Fate's Warning. Ioannis is the man that, if you like, put together the cover work, front cover, and the artwork for that album. So we're going to chat about the band at the time, the environment that Ioannis was working in, the label, and just a general conversation about the Absog album from Ioannis' eyes. Until then, take care, stay safe, enjoy the show. Open
to fire. Paris of Troy out through Ludos Records, their debut single, Torn Away. True inside. Australian prog at its best. Available for download and stream on all digital platforms.
Hey, this is Joey Vera from Armored Saint and Fate's Warning and Motor Sister, and you're listening to Prog Rock Digital. The most important thing in that situation is that we were at the right place at the right time. We're talking 1980. We were in LA, 1980. We were coming up in 1983, basically, 82, 83. That's when we first got out and started playing.
Yeah.
So you're talking about Los Angeles. You're also talking about the rise of heavy metal. Because prior to that, there really wasn't any scene. There was nothing was happening in LA. It was just left over from New Wave, basically.
Yes.
So, you know, you're having this new genre kind of come and spread across. Of course, it started in Britain, New Wave of British Heavy Metal, and then it just flowered worldwide from there. And so LA, of course, we were very much influenced by it, as were a lot of other bands. And bands just started getting snatched up. I mean, Quiet Riot was the first band to get signed, then Motley Crue. And then from there, it just started snowballing. Then you had bands like Wasp, you had bands like Rat, Black and Blue, you know, all these bands started coming out of LA. And we were right there with them. We were at the same age, and we were playing the clubs at the same time. So it was just kind of a matter of time before one of the labels were going to come sniffing around.
Yeah.
I mean, Polygram actually came to us before Chrysalis, and they were kind of grooming us. They were taking us out to dinner, and, you know, we did several meetings with them. But the A&R guy couldn't get enough people on board to be to want to sign us. And then next thing you know, Chrysalis came knocking on our door. And then we met Ron Fair, who was the A&R guy who signed us, and he was like, I have to have you guys. And so he did the same thing, you know, groomed us. We did several different demo sessions, and before you know it, we had a record deal. It was crazy. And the thing is too, like, we had only been a band for like a year and a half at this point, so we were pretty young. And we'd only done something like 46 gigs or 45 gigs in that span. And, you know, I get this time too, like we were, it was a new scene here. So it was just teeming with popularity. So every band was doing well. So we were playing with Wasp. We were playing with Rat. We were playing with Black and Blue, selling clubs out ourselves at this point. We could play to 300 to 600 people on a given night. So we were a small commodity, just playing in LA. I mean, that was the only thing. We played in Los Angeles and Orange County, a little bit down south, and that was it. We were just playing the clubs. That was it. We didn't get on tour until after our first major label record came out in 84. Our first record came out, and our very first tour ever was pretty impressive. We were supporting Quiet Riot on their Condition Critical tour. Yes. And the direct support for them was Whitesnake on the Slide It In tour. And so we were third band on the bill, and we were like, oh my God, what are we doing here? You know, watching David Coverdale every night, John Sykes, Cozy Powell was on drums. I mean, we were freaking out. Like, oh my God, I can't believe this is actually happening. So that was pretty phenomenal. I mean, I'll never forget that experience. It was just incredible.
Hey, this is Mark Zahner of Warlord, Fate's Warning, and 17 other bands. And you're listening to Prog Rock Digital.
To the layman, it may seem as if it's somewhat disconnected from the composition itself, but I mean, your drumming and your patterns always seem to fall back in line and in sync with the song and the project. So there is definitely a mathematical brain working overtime, if you like.
I definitely appreciate that. You know, even though Portnoy used to call it robotic, but okay, whatever. You know, but then again, if you want a good laugh, go watch him play Point of View in 11th Hour in Sao Paulo or whatever it is with Fate's Warning, and you want to see someone butcher up a track. I met Gary Werkamp, it was 20 years ago, and we moved to New York, and I called Mike Varney. Remember who Mike Varney is? Shrapnel Records?
Yes.
Okay, so I called Mike and said, hey, Mike, you know, I'm looking for a guitar player. I'm looking for a good guitar player, keyboard player, whatever. I want to start another band. You know, I want to do some stuff. Who do you got? So he hooks me up with Gary and we talk, and he's in Pennsylvania, whatever. Gary and I have probably written, I don't know, he says 85-ish, 85 to 100, I don't know, songs. I mean, like songs, not ideas, songs. Mm. We've always been trying to put stuff together. We had we have a list of singers that flaked on us. Like I was said before, even before I was prompted, me and Gary could sit down in a room for 4 hours and probably write 5 songs. Just an amazing connection. The professionalism too. I'll send him an idea and I'll go to bed and I'll wake up and there'll be like 9-part harmony that he recorded. Cause he's got a very, 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 very nice studio and he knows what he's doing. And it's just amazing to hear stuff coming back, you know, like all of a sudden, you know, it's crazy. Well, I got this guitar part. And, hey, I got this keyboard. And it's like almost like a finished record. But no, I love Gary. We get along amazingly well, both in music and then out of music, too. Just a lot of our lives kind of ran parallel. We were both involved in fires. You know, he lost his house completely burnt to the ground. Ours was just completely smoked out. But we did never go back to it. But ours wasn't burnt to the ground. But yeah, you know, he's got a son right around the same age as my two kids. You know, I have twins. A lot of parallel things, a lot of the same opinions and ideas as far as music goes and how it's done. And again, a total professional as far as just getting it done, you know. And so what happened was we had so many songs and we had all these singers just bail, you know, just, I mean, I could give you a list. I'm not sure if Gary ever gave you a list, but there's a list, you know, and hey, Gary, what do you got? I don't have anything, you know, kind of thing. And I think I said to Gary one time, I go, dude, why don't you just sing? This is getting ridiculous. You know, we've got a gazillion songs. So basically that Zonder Werkamp album came out of that same idea. I just kept sending Gary ideas. I still to this day, you know, when I'm not like in the middle of like recording something, you know, I just go in there and play and record and try to come up with like these cool, great ideas. And then I send them to Gary. You know, I send them to the guys that I'm working with now on the other project as well. You know, and just start writing stuff. And Gary just has a knack to be able to just write. You know, some guys are better at it than others, but no, unbelievably talented, you know, guitar, keyboard player, singer, you know, the whole nine. So no, definitely, you know, my quote, go-to guy, even on projects when I need background vocals, you know, I go to him. He's the guy that I'd like to have mix this next thing, because he did an amazing job on the Zonder WordCamp thing that we did. And yeah, I love the guy.
This is Nick Van Dyke from Redemption. You're listening to Prog Rock Digital. You know, it was mostly, I had written over the course of, God knows how many, 15 years, just a bunch of stuff that I never thought was going to go anywhere. But it was a fun creative outlet. And some of it was okay, and some of it was probably not very good. And then I bumped into Ray Alder from Fate's Warning it was two shows in succession, Flotsam and Jetsam show here in Los Angeles. And then a couple of weeks later, of all things, a Saxon show at the same venue, both at the Whiskey. Actually, the first was the Key Club. Anyhow, I just struck up a conversation with him and we wound up becoming friends, having nothing to do with music, other than the fact that I was obviously a huge fan of Fate's Warning. And then a couple months later, I played him some of the stuff that I'd written and he offered to help me produce an album. So between him and me, we reached out to some musicians that we knew and respected, and that sort of became the core that, you know, recorded the first self-titled Redemption record. And from there, I found distribution for it. And along with that came the opportunity to play at Prog Power back in 2003, I think.
Yeah.
So I needed musicians to perform with me live, and that's how I met the rhythm section.
How are you going health-wise?
Oh, thank you very much. You know, it's funny. I feel fine. All my blood work is all good. The weird thing is I went to the, you know, God, been 11 years since I was treated. I went to the one doctor in the world who at the time thought that disease was curable. And he and, you know, half a dozen people that work for him. Now maybe it's 15 people that think it's curable in some cases. He's now retired in his mid-70s. So he says I'm cured, but he doesn't practice medicine anymore.
Right.
The guy who took over his practice for him said, won't say I'm cured, but says it is very unlikely you will experience a recurrence. And then every other doctor I talked to, including the guy that I see locally for follow-up, is like, huh, this is a really long remission. I can't really explain. So there's a sort of Damocles hanging over for me, but it's sort of like COVID. You can't live your life just waiting to die.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, yeah. And you shouldn't live every day like it's your last, but you, because that robs you of the ability to look forward to the future. But you know, you got to live. You can't be a prisoner of fate.
Yes. Yes.
And
yes.
You know, God forbid if it comes back, there'll be a whole bunch of different treatments that I can try, and I'd really rather not do that though. So, hopefully, it is gone for good.
Mr. Mick Box, welcome to Prog Rock Digital. How's it all going, man?
It's going really well, mate. Apart from all the rubbishy COVID-19 that we're having to put up with, and lockdowns and goodness knows what else, you know. The funny thing in life is that, you know, a big hole appears in your curriculum, so we've got no touring, but then another million things fill that hole, so you're just as busy as ever, you know. So, you know, I'm writing songs for the new album, doing a lot of writing stuff, playing. I'm doing all my lockdown videos, Mick Mundy videos, Ask Mick videos, and I'm doing this thing called Cameo, which fans can pay for me to say happy birthday to, you know, anybody they want, or anniversary or whatever celebration. And all that money goes towards my cancer charity. So, you know, I just fill it up with other things, my friend. And of course, you know, I've got the family, so they expect me to be with them. So, and I love it because it keeps you grounded.
So, Mick, if we can just chat about your most recent release out through BMG, 50 Years in Rock. A, you know, if you like, a retrospective look at the last 50 years in Uriah Heep. This would be what, album number 25 with what, another 25 live recordings?
That is an underestimate of the live, to be honest. We've got so many out there, it's just unbelievable. It's just uncontrollable because, you know, a lot of the stuff we don't own over the years, and a lot of the stuff is picked up and sort of amateur bootlegs, if you like, and there's a lot out there. But that, to me, that's good. That's a sign of success too. Yeah, BMG have done a marvellous job. You know, they've embraced it fully And just simply to get all of our studio albums in there, which is amazing. And there's art cards from Roger Dean, who was probably one of our most famous artists that we use with Demons and Wizards, Magician's Birthday. He's done new slants on the covers. So you've got an art card that with both album covers on the side, and for Magician's Birthday and Demons and Wizards. There's a new artwork for a vinyl, Magician's Birthday, that Roger's done. So it's really cool. Yeah, there's a lot of really good, interesting stuff in there. Yeah. It's, I mean, they should have called it This Is My Life, to be honest, but but you know, it's done us proud, and we're, you know, come on, not many bands have lasted 50 years, and we have, and you know, I'm very, very proud of that fact.
Hey everybody, it's Gary Wehrkamp from Shadow Gallery, Amron's Plate, and a few other bands here and there. Just saying hello and reminding you to keep you here, and you're listening to Prog Rock Digital. It really tests your character in some of the ways I felt like I succeeded in being courageous, but it, just as much I was equally pretty failed at times, and really kind of searching for kind of the strength to go on. You know, I mean, it was one thing to lose, you know, my stuff and my house. I mean, I was thankful my family was safe, but also my teaching business and then also my studio. You know, I don't have any complaints about it, especially now, but at the time you were like, wow, it's, you know, 30 years of building up a studio and instrumentation, and you know, it's the time that it takes to get it back. And but you know, here I am in my new control room in my new studio now for a couple of years, and I couldn't be any more grateful. It was the record label who set that up. I think James went to Magna Carta, or Pete Morticelli, yeah, from Magna Carta Records offered James the chance to do a record. I don't really know how that came about. And James said he would be interested in collaborating with a few people on it. And they gave him our number. And so he collaborated separately, but also together with Carl, Brent, and myself. Mm. I think we did two records together. So the first one was a lot of mailing CDs to each other. You know, it was back in those, okay, days. I don't even think you could email music back in 2000 or whatever. I don't even know when that was, but I wasn't emailing music so much then. So it was like mailing CDs, and I'd have ideas and I'd give them to Carl. Carl would write some lyrical ideas and send them to James. He'd try some stuff out. By the second album, I believe, or maybe it was the first one, he actually flew down to work face to face, which was a much nicer experience.
Yes.
And so to spend a few days with him in a good studio and really kind of like bounce ideas off each other. And James he's fantastic. I mean, he's very smart, very talented, but he's every bit equally as nice and just very polite and just great to work with, you know? So I remember that whole experience being really like moved by him, moved as a person, you know? And while we were nice face to face, our emails were totally, you know, joking and insulting and just ridiculous and stupid nonsense. But but I wasn't there for any of the recording of it. I think he did the recording up in Boston, and that's when, you know, he was already working with like Mike Mangini in those days, who, you know, would eventually become to be in Dream Theater. Yeah. But, you know, I remember like sending Mike the songs, and honestly, like Mike Mangini is so good that I remember thinking I'm going to write, because I would write the drum parts, and I would write the hardest drum parts possible. You know, I was like, I got to write, you know, for double bass, like really, really crazy fast stuff, because I know Mike's the one guy in the world who can play it, you know, and some of that stuff was cool and fun to do. And I don't know if James ever knew this, because he gave me a great, great compliment once. He was like, man, you're just one hell of a drummer, Gary. And I was like, well, thanks, James. But I was actually doing the double bass with my fingers on my keyboard. And I was I would set up just nothing but cymbals and the tom-toms. But all the kick drums and the snare, I'd be like, and then I would overdub with a couple of room mics, just me hitting the crashes and the hi-hat and the toms. And so it sounded like a real kid. It sounded like I was really drumming, but I really was kind of faking it. But I'm no Mike Mangini, I can tell you that.
I've done about, well, close to 400 record covers at last count.
Wow.
And I've attacked, I think, every genre except maybe country music.
Yep.
Actually, no. I did a cover for a country act because we ran a design firm, but with my brother, my Greek brother, George, we were the only two guys in the family that didn't open up a restaurant, you know, like all the other Greeks. We went to the music business. Crazy us, right? But the bands, Deep Purple, Uriah Heep, King Crimson, Dream Theater, Voivod, Sepultura, Biohazard, Ingvar Malmsteen, Styx, Warren, Slaughter, work with Bon Jovi on his world tour in 1995, work with the Stones, Allman Brothers, Lynyrd Skynyrd, obviously Faith Warning.
Yep.
Flower Kings, John Anderson of Yes, Jean-Luc Ponty. I know I'm missing people. They're going to get PO'd.
That's okay.
The Blue Oyster Cult.
Yep.
It's been quite an experience. Let me put it that way.